This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Sunday night edition of Cashing Out, live from downtown Las Vegas and our Circus Sportsbook studios. I'm Ben Wilson with you for the next 3 hours. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about tonight, starting with maybe May Madness, what we can call it now. It certainly is, from an upset perspective, putting March Madness to shame, and that's college baseball. We'll dive in deep as regional weekend is going on. As always, though, we've got our main quartet of sports to get into with the NBA NHL Finals getting underway next week. We'll have full guest spots breaking all of those down. Nick Whalen from Prop Points here on VSiN and RotoWire joins us in 15 minutes. He'll spend a couple segments with us getting all the angles for NBA Finals matchup between the Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Our guy Jonathan Davis, in his usual Sunday night time slot as well, joins us to talk all things Stanley Cup Final, which will get underway in a couple days. Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. Also, we'll have Scott Reichel from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. It's French Open week two. We're into the business end of the tournament, as we call it. French Open now wrapping up the round of 16 into the quarterfinals, which get underway on Tuesday. Round of 16 wraps up starting early, 5 a.m. on the East Coast on Monday. So it's a lot to get to, but let's start with some action right off the top. Yes, it might be Sunday night. It might be 11 p.m. on the East Coast, but we still have college baseball that's yet to get underway. So let's fire it up. This has been an unbelievably upset-filled weekend already in the college baseball regionals. Whenever you have pods of four teams in a double elimination format, there's bound to be some chaos. But it's even transcended what I thought would happen coming into this season. I call a lot of college baseball during the regular season, and man, has it been wild. We'll get into just the macro perspective here in a second. I want to first start out, though, with an individual game pick here for the one last game yet to get underway. UCLA, UC Irvine. Let's go out to Jackie Robinson Field in LA, where UCLA is one of just a handful of number one seeds that have been unscathed so far, have won their first two games in the regional, have a chance to clinch a trip to Super Regionals, be one of the final 16 teams standing with a win tonight. But they'll have to do so against a very good UC Irvine Anteaters team who've won back-to-back games to get into this position, the two seed in this regional. They lost to Arizona State to start the tournament. Since then, two state straight wins for UC Irvine, and they are very live in this game tonight. As much as it's rare for teams who lose their opener in regionals to then run the table, you'd have to win four straight games to do that. And only 7% of the time a team has won regionals who started 0-1. UC Irvine has to win two games here. They'd have to beat UCLA tonight, win tomorrow. I don't know if they can go 2-for-2 against the Bruins, but I really like their chances tonight in the one game yet to get underway. Plus 130, and they've gotten some money here in the market after opening plus 140. That's available at DraftKings, Circa, Westgate as well, among the leaders in the college baseball market. That's a pretty good price on an Anteater team that was an at-large out of a mid-major, but the Big West is not just a normal mid-major. This is a legitimately good league. Cal Poly, who won the Big West tournament, they're already in the conference, the regional final, I should say, in the regional against Arizona, which is going on right now. So look at the Anteaters. Just looking at some of the pitching that's still available, and that's the big thing you have to handicap this late in the regional. What's the depth like? How many good arms can each of these teams go to? I'd say UC Irvine's in a pretty good spot. They've yet to use their Sunday starter, their third starting pitcher, Ryder Brooks. They'll start with a reliever, a bullpen game tonight. But Brooks, I'd imagine, will be able to go and give them some chunk innings here. He had a shutout in complete game fashion, striking out 10 against Hawaii earlier this season. A really good option to bring out of the pen tonight for UC Irvine. And they'll also have their best reliever, Ricky Ojeda, who is a whopping 13-1 this year. He hasn't pitched since Friday, went 2 2/3 innings in the loss against Arizona State, but he's available, and that's as good as you could ask for right now, this late in the regional, for back-end pitching depth for the Anteaters. They just put up 11 runs earlier today on Arizona State. They have 5 of the 9 in the starting lineup hitting over 300. I do like their chances to be live and really put some pressure on UCLA, force this series into a winner-take-all championship regional tomorrow. And this was one of only two number one seeds, UCLA, who was plus money to win their regionals in the futures market. Not a team you were expecting to run away with this region by any means. These are very evenly matched teams who actually split in the regular season. They played a couple midweek games spread out over a couple month span. each team winning one. So I like the Anteaters. Let's start the show with a little sweat here. Give me UC Irvine plus 130 over UCLA. As far as the macro perspective, we're talking college baseball regionals. We wouldn't bring up this tournament at all if there were no upsets, if it was just chalk from start to finish. We wouldn't be sending multiple shows to Omaha to do jello shots at Rocco's in a few weeks as we are at the network. But this tournament, in a sense, has put March Madness to shame with the amount of upsets we've had so far. We'll show you right now the teams who made it today, who were 2-0 going into the regional final. And to win a regional, if you do it the easy way, you just win three games in 3 days, right? Seems easy enough. It's not as straightforward as that, though. The 2-0 teams that are still alive right now, there were 16 regionals, okay? Only 8 of the number one seeds were the 2-0 team heading into the regional final today. So in half of your 16 regionals, you had some sort of carnage. And I'm not talking about even money plus 115 upsets. We're talking fourth seed Murray State, who was 30-1 to win their regional, shocked Ole Miss to start off that regional and is now in a battle right now. Murray State taking on Ole Miss behind. They'll likely go to a winner-take-all game tomorrow. 30-1 right there. USC, a number three seed who is just getting underway right now against top seed Oregon State, 8-1 to come out of their regional. We had the number one overall seed, the Vanderbilt Commodores, who were big favorites, minus $4 to come out of their region. Not only did they not win the region, they didn't even make it to the regional final. They're already knocked out as they went down to fourth-seeded Wright State. And here's a look at all of the regional finalists on your screen. So we did have some chalk, right? And we'll get to LSU in a second because they're in a dogfight in the regional final. LSU, Arkansas, Auburn, all taking care of business so far. But look at all of the upsets that have gotten to this point. Anywhere from even Coastal Carolina, who wasn't the favorite in their own region. It was the two-seed Florida. All the way down the line, Miami of Florida, plus 750 is a three-seed. The longest shot so far that is likely to clinch a regional, Louisville, who is up right now on Wright State as we speak in the fifth inning, 6-1 as the two-seed in that Vanderbilt regional. West Virginia, moments ago, they just clinched a spot to Super Regionals. Plus 370 for the Mountaineers. They committed 5 errors today, by the way. Didn't even matter in a crazy 13-12 win over Kentucky. You also have Duke, Arizona in brackets where the number one seed was eliminated very early. And in Arizona's case, the Oregon Regional in Eugene, the Ducks went 2-out. Only number one seed to go 2-done. That is sort of like your number one seed getting bounced by a 16 seed, if you put that into March Madness terms. The point being, this is a great betting vehicle to look for value in the underdog market. Sure, you don't want to be blindly betting these underdogs left and right. It's not a generally smart strategy in the long run, especially if you don't have actual conviction on these teams. But by picking your spots, it's a situation where teams down the board, A, they're not afraid of the moment. The number one seed, as much as the home field advantage is nice, it doesn't create that automatic advancement factor like you might see in some other sports. And B, in the transfer portal era in college baseball, it's not like college basketball where it seems like, we saw this in the last 2025 March Madness tournament, where the best of the best only got better and widened the gap between them and the mid-majors. There's so much talent to go around in Division I baseball that you have a lot more competitive mid-majors up and down the board than you would have pretty much in any other sport. And we're seeing that right now, because remember how we just showed you LSU? You're thinking, okay, yeah, as much as there have been some nice stories, still, the Blue Bloods are taking care of business. LSU minus 650, your heaviest favorite to advance from a regional. And it looked like they would cakewalk. They had back-to-back shutouts going into the regional final today against the number four seed, Arkansas Little Rock. Little Rock, by the way, a whopping 100-1 to win the regional. Pretty amazing they even made it to the regional final. And as I update my odds screen with the scores right now, you're not going to believe this, but Arkansas Little Rock, they are 6-3 leaders as we go to the fourth inning right now. Arkansas Little Rock, who in the pregame markets, and again, this is not futures. This is a single game baseball pregame market. Think about this for a second. Arkansas Little Rock, you could have got 14-1 at Circa. There's another book I'm looking at in my odds screen. You could have got Little Rock 18-1, and yet here they are with a 3-run lead. So a lot to keep track of. The regional winners for tonight, and this is even updated since we made the graphic, since games have been going all day today. Congratulations to Florida State, the earliest minus money favorite that does advance. Florida State, a number one seed, minus 140. They hold serve in their regional, going 3-0. Coastal Carolina, plus 130. They win all three. They were not even favored. The only number one seed to not be favored in their own regional. The Chanticleers are moving on after an awesome pitcher's duel. 1-0 earlier today over East Carolina as the number one seed at plus 130. Duke sweeps the board. They take out Oklahoma State 3-2, 3-1 for Duke to win that regional as the number two seed. And then, as we mentioned, West Virginia plus 370. They sweep the board, win a crazy game over Kentucky today. One of my favorite futures went down, unfortunately, in the Clemson Tigers. Clemson was the minus 110 favorite in that particular region. So those are the teams so far. Keep you updated as the night goes on. We still have a bunch of games going. Again, these are games that for the team who has lost already, you got to win to force a winner-take-all game tomorrow. We already know we have, updating the odds screen here, two winner-take-all games set for Monday night. We'll talk about those later on in the show. It's a good time to remind everybody about our special VSiN Pro discounted annual subscription. You get 2 extra months for free right now. It's $199 if you use our promo code PRO with our daily best bets. You get in your email, betting splits from Circa and DraftKings, full access to the VSiN Watch app, and our upcoming NFL betting guide. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Again, that promo code is PRO. We are just getting started. It's cashing out. We've already got an underdog in our pocket portfolio here, and we're about to talk a little NBA Finals. Thunder, Pacers, how competitive will this series be? We'll get Nick Whalen's thoughts from Prop Points and RotoWire as we're just getting started here from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Just getting started, Sunday night edition of Cashing Out. And while we were in break, yet another massive upset as the Texas Longhorns fall. College baseball regionals continuing. How about the Roadrunners of UTSA, plus 280 to win the region? They shock the Longhorns, horns down at the Dish Falk, as the number one seed Texas Longhorns are out. So congrats to UTSA. They win all three games as the number two seed there. The chaos continues here in college baseball. We'll have plenty of updates throughout this first hour of the show. As we have our must-win games, our winner-take-all games for Monday, we'll let you know about them. Two already. We'll see if we get some odds tonight, get some previews going on later in the show. For now, let's talk NBA Finals and go out to our progressive guest line. A couple of Wisconsinites here, just here to chop it up, talk a little basketball right now, because Nick Whalen from RotoWire, hear him on Prop Points 5 days a week on the network, is with me. And it is June 1st, Nick, which means there's a couple guys from Wisconsin. That kicks off our unofficial four-month golf window in the great upper Midwest. So I assume you got out there today to celebrate appropriately so, right?
I got out early Friday morning before our show, of course, still left myself plenty of time to prep, and then got out Saturday. I actually spent the afternoon today, Ben, up at Erin Hills for the U.S. Women's Open, taking that in. As much of a golf fan as I am, as much as I play golf, I actually don't watch all that much golf, usually because I'm playing during all these tournaments, but I'd never actually been to a golf tournament, men's or women's. Obviously, those have come through the state of Wisconsin plenty over the last decade or so, but awesome experience, incredible course up there at Erin Hills, and very, very cool to see Maya Stark bring that thing home.
Amazing. I'm jealous. I went to the 2017 U.S. Open at Erin Hills, famously when Brooks Koepka got his first major.
That's right.
And it was kind of wild back then watching this unknown guy named Brooks Koepka just like I'm five feet away from him. He's hitting wedge from 170 out of like thick stock-like grasses and just doing it effortlessly. I'm like, wow, this guy seems really strong. And here now it is.
More than anything, this was just reaffirming, which I already knew, but really, really reaffirmed. Like, I am not good at golf at all. you see some of these lies. You see how the course is set up, relative to like the little munis that I'm playing around Milwaukee. And there are so many of these situations where like this would be an auto 8, maybe a 9, maybe a 10 for me. And I mean, the way that these women are able to scramble, it was incredible, man. It was incredible. It was a nice reminder, a nice humbling reminder of where I actually stand in the golf world.
That's not the worst thing, though, for our golf games from time to time. You and I are going to hit the links again soon. We had a great time last time you were out here in Vegas. Let's go, though, to some NBA Finals. most people are, I would assume, rooting for Indiana. It's been a great feel-good story. Maybe not so much for us, just watching what has, to be frank, been a, just a pain-in-the-ass team all year, Indiana. But the bigger question, just from a macro scale, and then we'll dive into some of the individual pieces, you have Oklahoma City. They're minus 800 in the series. We just watched Indiana, for as big of an underdog as they are, they have been so good at exploiting opposing teams' weaknesses. And against the Knicks, they were able to turn their lack of depth, their lack of ability to run, into a major advantage. The question now, Nick, is there a weakness they can exploit, and what would that be if Indiana is to make this thing more than just a sweep or a gentleman's sweep?
I think it's a really good question, and I think you set it up well. And obviously, you know, Indy has been exploiting those weaknesses in the Eastern Conference. I think you can easily say OKC has been doing the same, perhaps with a tougher road, you know, depending on how you value teams like Minnesota and Denver. I respect the hell out of this Indy team, reluctantly, Ben, who has, you know, done nothing but terrorize our poor Milwaukee Bucks over these last couple of years. I've had to come around and just kind of accept the reality that this might be the best team in the Eastern Conference. But I still look at this as OKC's finals to lose in just about every way. I think the odds tell the story. This team is 80-18 on the season, which is ridiculous. I think we can say all these platitudes about the Indiana Pacers, which are all true, but I think in a lot of ways OKC does everything that Indiana does, just at a higher level, right? And you know, I think the one big thing you look at, and you know, a huge advantage going into that Minnesota series that OKC had, part of the reason I didn't think they would have a whole lot of trouble, was that Minnesota was a high turnover team, not only in the regular season, but in the playoffs. And obviously we saw that come to fruition. But the thing about Indiana is, you know, they take care of the ball, right? And, you know, I think the one thing that OKC has done, well, many things that they've done, but I think the thing that stuck out most defensively is that they just force so many turnovers. It doesn't seem to matter who the opponent is. They're forcing 18 opponent turnovers per game during this playoff run, which is the most by any team in a playoff run since the 1996 Chicago Bulls, who, you know, I was 4 years old at that point. Ben, you were around the same age. I was told that was a pretty good team. I think there were some notable names on that roster.
Maybe a couple.
You look at what Indiana has faced so far. Obviously, there's been some solid opponents, Milwaukee, Cleveland, and now New York. But none of those opponents ranked higher than 14th in the regular season in terms of opponent turnover rate. So I think this is there's kind of a shock value that comes with facing Oklahoma City. You tend to see it early in series. And yeah, you know, I know Indiana, you know, these teams are number one and number two in limiting fast break points. They're number one and number two in points off of turnovers. Like, the numbers say they're close, but I think this is a level up. This is a big level up for Indiana. And look, if you're OKC and someone had told you a month ago, hey, your opponent in the finals, it's not going to be Boston, it's not going to be Cleveland, those are the two teams you've been keeping your eye on all season, it's going to be the Indiana Pacers, obviously you respect how Indiana has gotten here, but I think Oklahoma City recognizes the opportunity that's in front of them. I know this team has a long runway. They'll likely be back. They're going to be a contender for 5, 6, 7 years. I don't know if they're going to have a more advantageous finals matchup on paper.
Nick Whalen with us right now on Cashing Out. Give him a follow with Whalen. Just replace the L with the number one. Great. It's a great handle that Nick's got over there. Fellow Wisconsinite talking NBA finals right now. I think for most bettors too, Nick, you're looking at it and you go, okay, I'm not touching the series general price when you're talking about minus 700, Indiana coming back at 5-1 here. Even if you had some crazy Indiana futures, I have some friends who cashed Eastern Conference finals big odds with Indiana, also someone who's got a NBA championship complete future, and the hedging conversation gets very difficult in that sense. But setting that aside, if you're looking at it, I think most people are naturally going to gravitate to the series games market, since that's pretty close to an even money proposition. It's minus 135 to go under 5.5 games. And by the way, you'd much rather bet that than the Thunder to cover the 2.5 games, since you got to lay minus 140 on that. Since that's your closest thing here to minus 110, Nick, what side would you be looking at as far as a 5.5 game prop?
Yeah, I think that is the natural pivot here. I mean, if you want to go over to the correct score markets, I don't mind, you know, dabbling in Thunder and 5 at plus 250, Thunder and 4 not far behind at plus 260. I think this is a 5-game series. I would lean on that under 5.5. I have enough respect for Indiana that I would be surprised if this is a sweep. And, you know, there aren't that many finals matchups that we can even compare this to. You know, if you look at the last decade, last 10 to 15 years in terms of, you know, OKC being this heavy of a favorite, like the only other teams that are kind of in that neighborhood, and this was even beyond that, were, you know, the 2017 and 2018 Kevin Durant Warriors when they went up against the Cavaliers. I mean, they were closer to minus 2,000 in those final series, which is a whole different level of stacking the deck for that Golden State team. But you know, even one of those years that the Cavs did take a game off that Warriors team. And we've seen, you know, OKC, for as dominant as they've been, obviously the Nuggets took them to seven games. Minnesota blew them out in game three. You know, there's a game even in that Memphis series where they were down 20 plus at the half. So it feels like they're bulletproof. It feels like this team is impenetrable. I think they could drop a game. You know, maybe it comes in OKC, more likely. Maybe it's game three or four in Indiana. But again, I think the Thunder, even though they haven't necessarily been battle tested in the ways that other more veteran laden teams have, they are the youngest team in the NBA. I think there is a confidence with this team. They will not get rattled. And you know, we've seen them, you know, come back from deficits. We've seen them, you know, close quarters with these avalanches and just continue doing that in the next quarter or in the next half. Like, there is a maturity with this team that goes, I think, beyond the age of this roster. So I could see them dropping a game. I would be surprised. I would be surprised if this goes six or seven.
Total is fascinating to me. These will be for single games, Nick. Game one, 230.5, higher than we've seen a lot of the NBA playoff games be lined. OKC laying 9.5. It so certainly depends on the tempo we see Indiana try to establish. How do you see that playing out game one specifically when Rick Carlisle has not had an opportunity to make the adjustments that he's been amazing at throughout these postseason?
Yeah, I think the total was something I was looking forward to. You know, both of these teams, I think, are used to dictating pace, you know, forcing the opponent to adjust to them. And you know, now you have two teams going up against each other who both feel like they have that advantage. I think I trust OKC a little bit more in that respect. I think the Thunder are more comfortable playing at different paces. You know, even if you just look game by game at the advanced game logs over at Basketball Reference, one of my favorite resources. I mean, they've won games that were played in, the low to mid 90s in terms of pace. They've won games that are played well over 100 in terms of pace. Whereas I feel like Indiana needs that pace to be fast. You know, we saw that in the Knicks series, right? The game that they dropped, game five, was played at, you know, a snail's pace, and all of a sudden it's back up in game six. So to me, OKC has more ways that they can win individual games, more ways that they can win this series. Whereas I think Indiana feels like they need to push that pace. You know, when you look at that game one total, my concern here is that we do get the OKC defensive blitz, right? And I'm not necessarily worried about the Thunder holding up their end of the bargain when it comes to scoring. But if you like that over, I worry about Indiana, you know, putting up something like 94 points in game one and coming up a little bit short. So to me, I would lean under on that number. I think OKC is well equipped to get after Tyrese Haliburton with all those guards.
110.5, by the way, the Indiana team total for game one. Maybe an option.
I would go under on that.
You look at there. He's Nick Whalen from RotoWire and Prop Points. We'll stick around. Another segment with Nick Whalen. We'll talk some Giannis next team odds, some individual awards as we continue on Cashing Out.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out rolls on this Sunday night, continuing to be joined by a great Wisconsinite. We had Greg Peterson lead into our show, great Wisconsinite. Now we have Nick Whalen from the show Prop Points, you see 5 days a week here on the network. He and the great Jeff Erickson, also a senior analyst at RotoWire. You hear his great work on the SiriusXM Fantasy Channel as well. Nick Whalen joins us talking all angles here of the NBA Finals. So we'll focus now on some individual player spots here, Nick. Just looking at some of our categories leader. And there have been some good plus money opportunities to cash. We just saw how Aaron Nesmith, it was a chop. He tied with Tyrese Haliburton, but 5-1 ties for the three-point leader. And that was honestly a rough beat if you had Nesmith. I knew some folks who did, and to not get that solely home was a little bit painful end of the day. So looking at the ones that are tight here, Haliburton minus 125 to lead the series in threes. You have Nesmith plus 425. Lou Dort 6-1. Rebounding is interesting. Holmgren versus Hartenstein. Holmgren minus 185. He out-rebounded Hartenstein in the Western Conference Finals. Hartenstein plus 195. Those are the two that probably are the most competitive. SGA, a massive favorite to lead the series in points. Haliburton minus 900 to lead in assists. Anything you like in that three-pointer or rebounding market with the individual players?
Yeah, I think both of those are interesting. Three specifically because you have Tyrese Haliburton as a modest favorite. And then, you know, the next two guys on the list are role players, right? And I think that speaks to one of the general trends heading into this final series, which is that neither of these teams are overly dependent on the three-point shot. You know, they don't live and die by it. They tend to avoid these feast or famine type of games that, say, Minnesota seemed like it had. You know, every other game they're either shooting, you know, 45% from three or 28% from three. And I think that's a big part of the reason why these teams are ultimately in the finals. One thing to note with OKC, Ben, is that they are shooting 33.5% from three as a team and are still 12-4 in the postseason. So you do wonder if that comes around at some point in this series. You know, I don't know that I love Haliburton at minus 125. I think I have to be getting plus money on that. You know, OKC specifically is so well equipped to slow down guards, right? I mean, we saw that, you know, an arguably a more dynamic individual player in the Western Conference Finals, and Anthony Edwards, you know, had three games in that series where it just felt like he couldn't do anything. And Tyrese Haliburton, even when he's rolling, can sometimes be a little bit reticent when it comes to shooting the ball. I mean, they only played OKC twice, of course, in the regular season. One of those games, he was completely shut down. I think he took only 6 or 8 shots total. So Haliburton is one of those guys that, you know, he can shoot the three. He shoots it well, but he's reluctant to do so. I don't know that the volume is necessarily going to be there throughout this series. I think you have to look at Nesmith at plus 425. You know, he gets almost a week to rest up that ankle. Clearly was bothering him at the end of the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know that I love SGA at 11-1. You could talk me into Jalen Williams, I think, at 11-1. You know, I think SGA is going to have plenty of success getting to the rim against this Pacers defense. I don't think he's going to have to chuck up a ton of threes. And then when you look at some of the longer shots, Nembhard to me feels like he kind of lost his confidence at times in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, Chet Holmgren's not going to have the volume. Caruso, Siakam at 40-1. Maybe that's worth something, but I would look at Nesmith at plus 425, Jalen Williams at 11-1 in the threes market.
And so far, seems like the best value we've uncovered, at least for any of these specific game bets. Game one, Pacers team total under 110.5. Pretty good angle on a total that is fairly high, given where these totals have been lined throughout the NBA playoffs. That full game total, 230.5. And was just pulling up the Nembhard points prop, 10.5 juiced over, which I just wonder for a guy who, I mean, the Knicks were daring him to shoot, right? They were like, please, man, we'll leave you wide open. He was, you know, double clutching, hitching. I mean, he had to start stepping up. It was a huge second half for Nembhard to help really flip that game, and he was awesome on defense.
Yeah,
it's a little hard for me to see, like, 10.5, especially if I'm getting the juice in a favorable way to the under, a pretty good fade, especially right in line with that team total under angle.
Yeah, it's tough, though, because, you know, early in the playoffs, I felt like we were cashing Nembhard points plus assists, you know, just about every night. I think he had a run of like 9 out of 12 games to begin the playoffs where he went over that 10.5 number. And it did creep up to, I think, as high as 13.5 at one point. But yeah, he's going to be a key piece for them in this series. But, you know, I think, again, part of the reason both these teams are in the finals is there really are no true weak links, right? There's not just a, all right, we don't have to guard that guy, or we don't have to worry about that guy defensively. I think both of these rosters are so deep and everybody can contribute. But OKC specifically, I mean, it's not just Alex Caruso and Kayson Wallace who get a lot of the credit defensively, and rightfully so. But I mean, Jalen Williams is one of the, you know, 15 to 20 best defenders, I think, at the guard position in the NBA. SGA obviously can hold his own on that end. So I think they're going to get after it defensively. And look, if Nembhard, maybe he is the weak link, if they're daring him to shoot, I need to see him do it, I think, before I'm buying in on that.
100%. And we look now at some of the other angles for the NBA Finals, talking about all the different aspects to bet this thing with our guy Nick Whalen, who you see on the network here 5 days a week. Check out his show Prop Points with Jeff Erickson as well. So we just saw, and no disrespect to Pascal Siakam, who was amazing in the Eastern Conference Finals, but I mean, come on, like, he wins. Tyrese Haliburton was walking to accept the Eastern Conference Finals MVP award. They give it to Siakam. And look, I bring this up because it's not the first time this has happened in an NBA Conference Final or NBA Finals series. Probably the most notable that should not have happened was Andre Iguodala winning the 2015 NBA Finals when, I mean, the Warriors aren't even in the postseason second round or beyond without Steph Curry. Anyway, that was 10 years ago. We can move on. My point being, SGA minus 600 to win finals MVP. Is there any part of your brain that's like, okay, these NBA voters, they might just look at the raw stats. They aren't really watching what's going on here. Is there any way somebody else wins that thing?
I don't really see it if you think OKC is winning the series, right? I mean, and what we have to keep in mind, you know, obviously that's just happened the other night. And, you know, I think you could argue there was, you know, some level of controversy last year. I think Jaylen Brown won Eastern Conference MVP and then also won the finals MVP, of course, over Jason Tatum. Is that we're dealing with a very small voter base, right? Like, Pascal Siakam won the vote 5-4 because only 9 people voted on that award. Yeah, I think if you had 50 voters, if you had 100 voters, it probably does go to Tyrese Haliburton. But that does introduce a little bit more variance into this market because you're dealing with such a small pool of voters. But the hoops that you have to jump through, if you, like I do, think OKC is going to win this series, for someone other than SGA to win finals MVP, it's like, okay, SGA has to have a brutal series. Like, he's got to have a terrible series by his standards. Someone else has to play the series of their life. And OKC still has to win that series despite SGA playing so poorly that he can't win finals MVP. You know, yeah. So there's, unless you think the Pacers are winning this series, or you think it's, you know, it's worth a sprinkle on Halliburton 7-1, Siakam 16-1. To me, I don't know if that's really long enough to intrigue me. I'd rather just bet the Pacers to win the series on the series line at that point than take either of those guys. If you think OKC is winning, I think this is one you just have to stay away from, because if that's the case, there's virtually no precedent other than Steph Curry in 2015 for, you know, a sitting MVP, clearly the best player on the team, not winning finals MVP in that scenario.
I figured it was worth just, you know, just bringing it up because of the chicanery that happened with the voting. Speaking of chicanery, Nick, this might be just, you know, a couple of us being each other's therapists here, but yeah. I don't know. I feel a little bit different about the whole, like, all this Giannis conversation. So Giannis Antetokounmpo widely rumored to be leaving Milwaukee, but you know, you look at his next team odds, and when I last checked, before they were pulled, Giannis was -150 to return to Milwaukee. San Antonio Spurs making a lot of noise, especially now that they have the number two pick. Could they put together a package for him in the +325/+350 range? I weirdly, just following his career so closely from the time he was, I mean, this is a guy who literally was once picked up on the side of the road because he was, you know, sending money from a Western Union back to his family in Greece who were trying to get out of poverty, and was picked up by a random fan because he was just going to walk like 7 miles to the Bradley Center in the freezing snow. This is a guy who has so much love and respect for the city of Milwaukee. Am I crazy for thinking that I actually don't have that much concern, considering all the teams that have the best packages are in the super loaded Western Conference, and in the last really 3 weeks, the Eastern Conference has gotten a lot more easier to navigate, especially with the Jason Tatum injury.
Yeah, I think everything you said is totally accurate. And the number one thing that we have to remember is that Giannis is still under contract with the Milwaukee Bucks, right? They are under no obligation to trade him. He doesn't have some trade in it or some clause in his contract where if he asks for a trade, he has to get it. Now, we do know how this typically goes, though, right, Ben? I mean, I can't think of the last superstar to openly ask for a trade and then not have that trade be granted. And oftentimes, you know, they get their wish as far as a specific destination. So it's going to take Giannis essentially demanding that trade. He'll likely have to do it semi-publicly. And if that does happen, he's going to give, you know, Milwaukee probably a list of, I don't know, 2 to 4 teams, maybe more, who he'd be willing to go to. I, as much of a Bucks fan as I am, as you are, Ben, I'm just kind of open to anything here. You know, Giannis delivered a title to the Milwaukee Bucks. I understand if his frame of mind is, look at this roster, how are we winning a title anytime soon? Damian Lillard might not even play at all next season. The Kuzma trade looks like a disaster. Brooke Lopez is on his way out. He's 38 years old. I think there's really a way for this to work out either way for the Bucks, because if you do have to trade him, you know, he's going to be 31. I don't know how many, you know, ultra elite years he has left. This is probably the highest his value would be at any point the rest of the way. You're going to get a massive haul for Giannis, but you're totally right about the Eastern Conference right now. And if Giannis looks around and says, do I really want to go to the West? All these teams that have the assets to acquire me, do I want to join that mix of like 10, 11 teams that feel like they're trying to contend for a title? Whereas, you know, it's an easier sell right now if you're the Bucks to say, look, the Celtics are kind of sitting next year out, at least we think. The Knicks are beatable. The Pacers are beatable. The Cavaliers clearly are very beatable. If we can just, you know, buy us a year, buy us maybe 2 years to put the right pieces around you, we can reassemble this thing. I think the sell right now is easier for the Bucks, Ben, than it was 3 weeks ago. There's no question about that.
I'm totally with you on that. Nick Whalen, always good to catch up with you, my man. Be well. Hit him straight.
Hey, you too, man. Thank you.
Give him a follow at Whalen, WHA, #1, EN. Give you some updates on some college baseball upsets when we return to Cashing Out.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out rolls on. A big thank you to our pal Nick Whalen from RotoWire and the VSiN show Prop Points with Jeff Erickson, spending the last half hour with us. I'm Ben Wilson, back from downtown Las Vegas. A lot of fans still here behind me in the Circus Sportsbook because we've got all the college baseball games on. It's been an awesome weekend of action, upsets galore. Get you some updates right now. LSU, the big one, they were a team that their opponent tonight, Arkansas Little Rock, the number 4 seed, was as high as 18-1 on the money line. Right now, LSU, because of that huge pregame number, LSU still -250, yet we're in the 6th inning here, and LSU trails 6-4. But, yeah, you still got to lay -250 if you think the Tigers come back. LSU would not be eliminated. Little Rock has to beat them twice. Arkansas Little Rock, 100-1 just to win this regional in LSU with some of the upsets and carnage that happened, along with Arkansas, are the short shots now to win it all in the College World Series. We'll get you some more updates in just a second. Quick reminder, though, about our friends over at ProfitX. We were talking about all the NBA Finals angles. We'll talk more Stanley Cup Finals with our pal Jonathan Davis in a little bit on the show. ProfitX, a great resource, though, peer-to-peer betting exchange, giving you the opportunity for the first of its kind in the U.S. to do that. And we have a special code for you, code VSIN. You earn up to $200 in profit cash available in over 40 states. Again, new user sign-up offer. Use that code VSIN. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. You can even request your own odds, so check them out at ProfitX. Couple more teams while we were talking to Nick punched their tickets to the Super Regional. So how it works in the NCAA baseball tournament, 64 teams, you have 16 regional pods, then you have 8 Super Regionals. So the 16 regional winners, they'll advance to the Super Regionals. There are certain Super Regional hosts that are already designated. Some of them will be true hosts. Some of these games will be played on neutral sites because the top hosts have already been eliminated and were unable to back up their seed, so to speak. So the first minus 200 favorite cash is Auburn, a number one seed. They take care of business. Auburn, a dominant win, 11-1 over NC State, as Auburn takes care of that regional. The third number one seed, but the second favorite to come out of a regional. Coastal Carolina was plus 130, but not the favorite in the regional. They were the top seed in. Also, a couple of games that have gone final. We now know there will be a third winner-take-all regional championship game tomorrow. Haven't seen any odds for these out as of yet. Still waiting on them. But Southern Miss, who were even money as the number one seed, favored to win their region. They just battered Miami. Miami, who have had a couple of really bad down seasons. I think most casual baseball observers would think, wait, this is the Miami Hurricanes. They've had just unbelievable talent over the years. At Alex Rodriguez Field, I've always had a blue chip sort of team. Well, they've been way down in recent seasons. They do get in this year, but just a three seed in a four-team regional. Yet Miami just needs to win one of the two games. Well, now they'll have to win tomorrow night. Southern Miss takes care of business as a short favorite there. So they now have three here, winner-take-all games for Monday. Tennessee-Wake Forest. Tennessee was stunned today by the Demon Deacons, who were trying to become one of just 7% of regional winners all time to lose their first game and then win four straight to take a regional crown. Demon Deacons stunned Tennessee earlier today. That was a 7-6 battle in Knoxville, while North Carolina takes on Oklahoma. So those are a couple of 1-2 matchups. Oklahoma behind a great manager in Skip Johnson, a veteran of college baseball. They beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill 9-5 earlier today. Oklahoma 4-1 to win that regional. They'll have a winner-take-all game. And Oklahoma, a team that did not lose their first game, so at least based on historical precedent, they would be much more likely of the two to get the job done, pull off an upset there. Those have been the big storylines right now. Again, if you missed it, couple of the big upset as we were coming on the air, UTSA Roadrunners stunned Texas, who was the number one seed in Austin. Remember, these upsets are happening on the home ballpark for the number one seeds in every occasion. UTSA plus 280. And they had the worst strength of schedule of any top two seed outside the top 120. The Roadrunners didn't even win their own conference tournament, needed an at-large out of the weak Conference USA. But it doesn't matter. Roadrunners are regional champions. Talk more college baseball a little bit later in the show. Really excited, too, to always get some different insights whenever we get to talk some of these niche sports. So coming up later today, and this will be in about 25 minutes or so, Zach Rieger from the Sports Betting Dime joins us. We'll get some more thoughts on the college baseball slate and what to look at for some of these Monday matchups as well. Also, a big baseball day, not in the college baseball specifically, but also Major League Baseball. We had a couple big storylines here as we get into our Sunday baseball recap. Kind of a shocking end of week for the Philadelphia Phillies. That was, to me, the biggest story in Major League Baseball. The Milwaukee Brewers, who had, by all accounts, looked like just a vintage 81-81, average as it gets team, come into Citizens Bank Park, just smash and grab their way to a dominant, really, I mean, this was a comprehensive in every way, three-game sweep at Philadelphia. Phillies had entered the week as the NL East leaders. After the Mets take care of business against the hapless Rockies, Phillies are now a game back in the NL East as they have fallen into that first wild card position. 5-2 in today for the Brewers. And what was good for Milwaukee, they get Jose Quintana back off the IL, who's had a really nice resuscitation year. He's the latest in a long line. You can talk guys like Wade Miley of recent years for the Brewers. Seems like every year the Brewers get a guy who comes in on the back nine of his career, and they are able, with pitching coach Chris Hook, to get the absolute most out of that particular pitcher. Quintana seems to be the latest one. After a shaky first inning in his first start back in about a month, Quintana settled in and was dialed in. The thing that really stands out to me, though, about the Phillies, they've been this ultimate beat-up-on-bad-teams group this year. You're looking at the Phillies, a team about 15 games over 500 for most of the year, yet 13-15 now against teams over 500. And granted, they've won their previous four series coming into this Brewers stint. Not that you look at a sweep and you go, okay, time to panic as we turn the calendar into June. But to me, Philadelphia, for the coming week, it's a total play-on team because they go at Toronto, at Pittsburgh. That's a nice, soft landing spot to go away from home, but not too far against teams who certainly have had their individual struggles, whether it's Toronto allowing runs, whether it's Pittsburgh not being able to score runs. A good way for them to bounce back. So I'd look to play on Philadelphia this week. But still, bigger picture, Philly has become one of a number of teams now. You can throw San Diego in this category. Teams who would have really good records but have struggled against the elite competition so far. Even the Chicago Cubs, you could lump into this, but more so because they just haven't played that many series against really, really good teams. That was a big takeaway from this week. Want to see Philadelphia show up in one of these marquee series. Granted, Jesus Luzardo had his worst start by far of the campaign on Saturday. That was a 17-7 loss for Philadelphia. I'm a huge Luzardo fan, been a big investor of him in fantasy, DFS, single-game prop formats for him, and I certainly got my teeth kicked in Saturday. But I'm expecting a bounce back for Luzardo this week, especially. That'll be an awesome matchup for him against Pittsburgh. So I would buy on the dip for Luzardo, a guy who I've been high on, assuming he could stay healthy. And the health is there. He just left a bunch of pitches middle in on a red-hot Brewers lineup that hit as a team collectively over 400 the first two games of that series. Meanwhile, Milwaukee goes to Cincinnati, a team who certainly has had their own issues scoring runs this year. Brewers, out of nowhere here, have won seven straight and back-to-back sweeps, first at home of the Red Sox and now going to Philadelphia. A really impressive showing. Other big storyline in Major League Baseball from this weekend, it was the series, Yankees going to Dodger Stadium in L.A., and after the Dodgers just embarrassed the Yankees in the first two games, not a fun weekend for me with some of my favorite pitcher props, Max Fried, along with Max Fried, Brandon Pfaadt, Jesus Luzardo. If you had that triumvirate, I'm sorry. It's part of why they always say whiskey and revolvers go hand-to-hand in betting baseball. And that was certainly the case if you were betting on some of those pitchers who've been great. Yankees at least salvage the Sunday night baseball game tonight. 7-3 win, a much-needed bounce back here for the Yankees after the Dodgers had absolutely owned them in the first two games. But look, this is one of those sort of like sticker shock series. Everyone wants to make a big deal out of it, especially when you think about the two biggest markets in the major leagues and the rematch of last year's World Series. But we both expect these teams to be fine, especially with the Yankees, who lose the series 2-1, in a division that has looked really, really subpar compared to preseason expectations, especially with the struggles of the Red Sox and all that has gone on there, with Baltimore already firing their manager, Brandon Hyde, this early into the season, and Toronto being super inconsistent night in, night out. Same thing for the Tampa Bay Rays. You still figure, even in losing 2 of 3, by no means is there anything you take away. And you also would expect Max Fried to be a great bounce-back candidate his next time out. I'll lump Brandon Pfaadt in there as well. Look to bet on those guys who got absolutely shelled. That's not who those pitchers are individually. Much better options going forward. That's a look at what happened through the MLB card on this Sunday. As we will get a break here, get into our second hour of sorts, talk about some French Open and PGA Tour results that happened on this day a little bit later on in the show, coming up in about 10 minutes. First, though, a reminder, if you are a VSiN fan looking to get involved with our Circa Survivor, Circa Million contest, and you want to do that for free, well, we've got a great opportunity for you right now. Winner's Circle Proxy giving away a free $1,000 entry to each contestant who gets it, plus full proxy service, and that's for each contest, Millions and Survivor. You'll be paired with the VSiN host for strategy all season long. Go to winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. On the other side, hour number two of Cashing Out. We'll talk French Open. A lot of big results today as the business end of the tournament gets underway tomorrow. Also talk another dominant win on the PGA Tour when we return.